Coming up, it's the long-awaited review of the OnePlus 2, the Sony A7 R2, and a computer that's so awesome, we put off reviewing it for months so that we could test it. You gotta watch before you buy.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Before You Buy is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Before You Buy is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools they need to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/BYB. And by iFixit. You can fix it, and iFixit makes it easy with free step-by-step repair guides, high-quality replacement parts, and all the tools you'll ever need. For $10 off your purchase of $50 or more, go to iFixit.com/twit and enter the code Before You Buy at checkout. Hey, and welcome to Before You Buy. It's Twit's product review show, where we take the latest and greatest gadgets and gizmos and we give them to members of the Twit staff, the hosts, the people who can give you the most honest reviews possible. Now, this first review is something that we've been clamoring for. If you are a fan of the Android ecosystem, you know about OnePlus. The OnePlus One specifically was a game changer, an inexpensive phone that you had to jump through hoops to get. But once you got it, most people were really happy. Well, they released the latest generation of this flagship killer. We've got Jason Howell giving his impressions of the OnePlus 2.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jason Howell, and I had the pleasure of spending, a little more than a week with the OnePlus 2. This is obviously a very interesting device. OnePlus is a company that rolled out the OnePlus One last year, kind of from the angle of this is a flagship level device for a low cost, so premium level, low cost. The OnePlus 2 they're touting as the 2016 flagship killer. It's obviously a bit of marketing, so take from that what you will, but they're the ones that kind of set that in the air. So we have to kind of hold them to that and see if this holds up to that. This here is the 64 gig model. It costs $389. You can also get the stripped down 16 gig model for $329. But let's take a look at the specs to start off with the OnePlus 2. It's packing a 1.8 gigahertz octa-core Snapdragon 810 processor. The 16 gig version has 3 gigs of RAM. The 64 gig version has 4 gigs of RAM. I'm thinking you probably want to just upgrade and go with that. Has a 5.5 inch 1080p display. It's an LCD panel with 401 pixels per inch. 13 megapixel rear-facing camera on the back. This does have laser autofocus as well as optical image stabilization, and then a 5 megapixel front-facing camera to look forward. There's a non-removable 3,300 milliamp hour battery underneath the case, the protector back here, and very interesting, a USB-C type connector. I think it's one of the first Android devices to carry that new, what's soon to be a big standard in the mobile world. It's only USB 2.0 compatible, though, so you don't get some of the extra features that some of the newer USB-C connectors bring with it if they're running USB 3.1 underneath. And finally, it's Lollipop. It's Android 5.1. It's based on OnePlus's own Oxygen OS. So, but it's a pretty light touch. I think I'm pretty happy with it for the most part. It's a pretty standard stock version of Lollipop with a few enhancements. I'll get into that in a second. So first of all, the design, I'd say that's definitely a strong suit here. It's a very solid design, very sturdy. It has this nice kind of metal trim all the way around the sides, which is a little bit different from last year's model. You'll notice between last year's model and this year's model, the back casing is very similar. It's got kind of almost a sandpaper type feel to it, but it feels good in the hand. And I think if you're going to go with kind of a plastic material, this is a good way to do it. It makes it feel a little bit more premium. It does have a dual SIM underneath. So if you have two SIM cards or you're a world traveler, that's going to come in really handy for you. That's a nice feature. One thing that I've never seen before is this notification switch on the side. It has three different points in which it can be set, and that ties directly into Lollipop's notification levels, which basically go from alarms only let alarms through, to priority interruptions, which you can determine a system level what gets through at that level, and then all notifications to just let them all shine through. It's a nice bonus feature because you can do this while it's in your pockets, set it to silent, alarms only, and you know that you're not going to get any calls to interrupt your meeting. There is a notification light up at the very top that flashes when you get a new notification. That's a nice to glance to. There's also a fingerprint reader down at the bottom. And yeah, so this is a mid-range, mid-tier priced phone packing what I think is a pretty decent fingerprint reader. I had a little bit of issues here and there with it recognizing my fingerprints. It can store up to 5 fingerprints, so you want to choose those wisely and make sure that you're hitting them at the proper angle. Once you learn it, for the most part, it ended up being okay, but I had some issues getting into it. Sometimes you can get into it from a screen-off state. I found the audio output actually on the headphones to be really good. It sounded great in my car, better than most phones, in fact, and in headphones, sounded really, really nice. There is a lack of near-field communication, NFC. It's one of the trade-offs that OnePlus opted for with the OnePlus 2. Personally, I think that's kind of a disadvantage here. We know that this next year, mobile payments are going to continue to get bigger and bigger with the rollout of Android Pay being very imminent. Basically, that means if you get the OnePlus 2, you are not going to be able to use this for mobile payments. And I think that's a big negative. The display, it's 1080p, as I said. I think that's perfectly sufficient for this size of a screen, 5.5 inches. It is a little bit washed out, though, and I feel like it kind of lacked contrast that I was hoping to see, especially when you compare it to, like, Super AMOLED panels. So it's a little weak, I guess, as far as that's concerned, and it has a little bit of a blue tint. You can actually kind of see the blue tint on the screen right now, and it looks that way in real life as well. Maybe a little bit less drastic, but it's definitely there. It kind of bugged me. So the camera, they really are touting this camera as an amazing camera, and there are some really great parts to this camera. First of all, the laser autofocus is pretty instantaneous. You put your hand right in front of it, it instantly zaps focus to your hand. You remove it, it instantly switches to the backgrounds. That's a really nice feature to have. But I found the shutter to be consistently pretty slow. And actually, with optical image stabilization on the rear-facing camera, you kind of hope that that's going to, you know, eliminate some of the motion blur in your images. And I didn't find that to necessarily be the case. I thought the camera was more finicky than it was a really great feature. I think I'm hoping, anyways, that software updates can kind of address some of my concerns with the camera. Again, great light, got great results. Low light, it did all right, but I found a lot more blur in low light images and a little of that grain. Overall, I'd say I'm unimpressed at this point, and I really hope that the software addresses some of those issues. Performance-wise, this phone is screaming. It's a Snapdragon 810 processor, this one with 4 gigs of RAM. There's really nothing that I could throw at this to really slow it down. Browsing, gaming, it all worked really well. And yeah, I was super happy with how it handled in that regard. The 810 is known to be a hot run a little hot when you're pushing the limits of the device. I didn't really notice that in, you know, handling the device and kind of pushing it, but your mileage may vary there. As for the software, like I said, Oxygen OS is very stock for the most part. There are some added features in there, though. Fully customizable on-screen buttons down here are capacitive buttons, but you can also in settings set that to be on screen if you like, and you can set any of those to have a double tap feature. So a function, for example, is if I hit the fingerprint reader twice, I've set it up to instantly launch the camera. So that's nice to be able to do. Double tap on wake, draw O on a screen off to open it up to the camera, little things like that. You can also customize the LED notifications, what they do. Pretty cool extra features in there. Software does seem a little buggy here and there, though. Though to OnePlus's credit, they recently, a few days ago, rolled out an update that really addressed a lot of that bugginess. So things are improving. OnePlus is working on it. So let's take a look at the pros of the OnePlus 2. First, it's speedy. This thing is super fast. You're going to love the performance that you get out of it. The dual SIM is great for world travelers. Fingerprint security, especially at this price point, and kind of the dependability of the fingerprint reader on here is nice. The design touches, including that alert slider on the side, some really interesting stuff there. And the price. I mean, that's what this is all about. High quality and a great price off contract. Now for the cons. You're not going to get mobile payments out of this. So you have to really ask yourself if you want to get in on that game or any of the extra features that NFC brings with it. You're not going to get that here. There is no fast charge. So is it, you know, is it toe-to-toe with current flagships that are offering fast charge? No, it's not. I didn't find battery life or charging speed to be very bad, to be completely honest. But there you go. The camera, I really expected more out of this camera, and I hope that software improves it. But right now, I'm not really digging it. And finicky software, although they are improving things. And finally, and this is a really big one, limited supply and an invite system. This is what frustrated fans of the OnePlus One eternally, is that it was incredibly hard to get. And you're going to have that same experience here. Right now, it's something like 4.3 million people on the wait list to get an invite for this phone. And that's the only way that you can buy it, is through their website with an invite. So you're going to be waiting a little while, probably, especially if the experience with the OnePlus One is something to learn from. So as for my verdict, I hate to do it, but I have to give it a try. It's definitely not an immediate buy, because there are features here that might matter a lot to you. And if you don't have those, then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. The trick here, though, is that you're not going to be able to try this unless you know someone that has it. You're not going to be able to try it, because you can only get it through their site if you have the invite. I think they made some sacrifices to hit this price point. I think the verdict's still out as far as if those were good sacrifices to make. But I just have to give it a try this time. My name is Jason Howell. You can catch my reviews here and on my other show about Android called All About Android. Thanks so much for watching.
It's a try for the OnePlus 2 from Jason Howell. Now, people who have the OnePlus 1 really like the OnePlus 1. We love what it did for the industry. It made all the major manufacturers rethink how they priced and how they spec'd out their handsets. But unfortunately, Jason thinks that the OnePlus 2 is not quite the flagship killer. And for $329 to $389, it's just a try. You can find Jason Howell every week on All About Android, and also for the Android App Arena, of course, in addition to doing his job as a producer and a TD here for the Twit Army. Now, let's move away from phones onto something a bit more sporty. We've brought in Megan Maroney to take a look at some Sennheiser headphones for the active. Now, Megan, These are no regular earbuds. You're kind of rocking out here.
Are you talking to me? I'm sorry. I couldn't hear anything.
I do that to myself, too. Yeah.
First
thing I'll notice is these are what? The Sennheiser OCX-686G Sport. So, you know, of course, longer names.
Yes.
Means better product.
Yes.
I also notice it's bright neon green.
It is green, yes. And it fits my weirdly shaped ears, which I will tell headsets do not. Earbuds don't ever stay in my ears, not even when I'm sitting still, you know, much less when I'm running, jogging, sweating. These do.
So these are not really earbuds. These are more like captive earbuds.
Right, exactly.
They have that little piece that goes behind your ears so that when you're jogging, they're not always falling out.
Right. And they're very flexible. They just bend every which way. They fit over your ear. Can we take a look at these? Okay, excellent. Is that a good place for them? Yeah, so they're super flexible.
Ooh, I like that. That's
They could fit. I mean, if you don't care, you could try them in your ears too, but...
Oh, I was told by Jason Howell that's how we spread diseases.
Okay, good to know. They fit all size people, and they have the different little gray parts. What do you call these little things?
Oh, ear
gray
marshmallows.
Parts. Yeah.
Ear mellows. Okay.
The ear mellows, they have different ones in case your ear canal is a different size. It also has this little volume. It's also a microphone, too.
Okay, this is one of the multifunction headphone/microphone.
So if you're running and you need to take a call, which you probably shouldn't, because that's not that safe, but you can. You can turn the, if you have an Android phone, you can turn the volume up and down. If you have an iPhone, as I do, those don't work.
Oh.
The volume doesn't work.
Because they don't have the proprietary Apple mojo.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly. So great for Android users or Windows Phone. It works with Sony, HTC, LG, Samsung Galaxy.
Now, what makes this sport? I see a lot of products that like to put sport into the name just so that people think, okay, it's for the active person. Is it just the color and just the captive earbuds, or is there something on here that you think actually works better for people who are active?
Well, it's the design, because they, if you, have you ever run with earbuds?
Okay, take the first part of that statement okay. first. No.
Maybe I need to chase you around.
Okay.
If
I, yes, I have been okay. chased before.
Okay,
yes.
chase right. you and try to get you to do my show, and then
got it.
And
got
I'll
it.
Chase you down. They fall out. They, you know, they just don't stay in. Some people have no problems with them. It really depends on the person. But so I have bought a ton of these. Like, I usually spend $10 to $25 on just your, you know, sport headphones. And then they fray or they break or they, you know, these the parts fall off. And so I end up spending a lot of money. So these are $79.99, which is a lot.
It's a lot.
But not if you count that, like, I'm down to maybe three or four pairs a year of $30.
So buy quality or buy often.
Right.
It's one of the two.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're sport because you can be really active with them. That's why they're sport.
Now, the other thing that Sennheiser is known for is sound. And it could be anything from their earbuds, their captive earbuds, to the full-on over-the-ear headphones. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the sound quality?
I loved the sound. I thought it was great, and I thought it kept background noise out, which was nice. And yeah, I listen to mostly podcasts, not so much music. I wouldn't call myself an audiophile. So if you are, I know you didn't say you wouldn't try them in your own ears, so
probably
we can't
not.
Say.
Yeah.
But all the reviews from audiophiles do seem good. I mean, Sennheiser is a good brand for sound.
Right. Yeah. And I have had Sennheiser captive earbuds before, and they sounded fantastic. In fact, they probably sounded better than some of the over-the-ear headphones that I've tried out.
Right.
And they were also way more comfortable.
Right.
It did have that nice, movable feel rather than like having my ears mold into the headphones.
Right. Yeah. And these, they don't get tangled. That's another big problem if you're jogging and running. Sometimes they can get tangled.
Right, right, right.
Get tangled in your gym bag, that kind of thing. These, I mean, they look tangled now, but they, you know, they pretty much come out easily. They don't look like they're going to fray very easily. That's the problem I have, too. They just tear. Because, you know, like I said, I shove them in my gym bag. I run. I lift weights. I don't wear them when I'm doing yoga. That's the only thing I don't.
Something I've also had when I've had Sennheiser products is they've given me a 2-year warranty. Like, anything ever goes wrong. And I literally had one where I smashed an ear cup. And they replaced it. Do they have that on this as well?
This is a 2-year warranty, yeah. So I've never had experience with the Sennheiser warranty. But if you have, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were really good. I thought there's no way they're good. Because obviously I did something.
Right.
I actually ran over it.
Yeah.
But they replaced it. They said, okay, we'll honor the 2-year warranty once. So don't do it again.
Yeah.
But we'll go ahead and give you a new set.
Right. So yeah, if you accidentally put these through the wash or something, I wonder how they would.
This should be water resistant. I mean, if they're sport, they're designed to get a little bit, not underwater, but a little bit wet, a little bit doused.
Yeah. Because, yeah, if you ran, you would know sometimes you sweat out of your ears.
Yeah, you do. All right, so give me the pros and the cons on the Sennheiser OCX-686G Sport earphones.
Okay, the pros are the sound, which is great. The non-tangleability, that's a pro. For iPhone users, you can use the stop button, which I think is helpful when I'm running and I see my neighbor. I don't want to have to mess around with my phone to stop. I just press the stop button and say, hi, neighbor, nice to see you. So that's that right there, the stop button. Flexible, fits all kinds of ears, and doesn't fall out when I'm sweating. Pros. Right.
Okay, that's the pros. What about the cons?
Well, the cons, as I said, if you have an iPhone, you're not going to have access to the volume buttons, which is a con, but not for Android users. The other con is the price, $79.99 for headphones that you, like I said, might throw into your gym bag.
Well, knowing that, try, buy, or don't buy.
Buy.
Buy. Okay, buy. You give these a buy.
Yes, I would definitely give them a buy.
Which fascinates me because you are an iPhone user. Mm-hmm. So even though that part of the functionality is cut off, you still think that these are nice enough that you'd spend money on them.
Yes, I would because, I mean, how far away is your phone? You can just turn the music down.
And I should mention there is an adapter that will push this into the format that's needed by the iPhone. So you get a tiny little adapter. It is a little extra bit of cable, but it will extend the capabilities into an iPhone.
And then you can use
that.
The volume?
Yeah.
Huh, how much does that cable?
$2.
Oh,
mono
that's
price.
Fascinating.
Go figure.
I learned something new
there
every
you
day.
Go, folks.
Thank you.
Well, there we have it from our very own Megan Maroney. If you are looking for a set of sports buds, something that won't fall out while you're exercising, something that can handle a little bit of rough and tumble, you need to check out the Sennheiser OCX-686G Sport earphones. Let's just throw a couple of Extreme X, Mega, Super, Waka Waka, because that's also what you put in the marketing. Megan Maroney, of course, you can find her every weekday for Tech News Tonight, all the news that you need to hear at the end of the day. Also for iOS Today and i5 for the iPhone. Megan Maroney, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Padre.
Now, before we move on to our next review, I want to take a moment to thank the first sponsor of this episode of Before You Buy. And this is a sponsor that will be near and dear to the hearts of entrepreneurs. Do you have your own business? Do you do your own creative products? If so, you know the pain of invoicing. I used to run my own business before I became a priest, and that was the worst part. I love my work. I love doing networking. I love playing with hardware. But when it came down to the numbers, to the invoicing, to making sure that I stayed on top of my billings, that wasn't good. In fact, I am sad to say that I probably lost out on several thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of dollars because I didn't bill on time or because I didn't follow up on an invoice. Well, that was one of my options. Another option would be to hire someone to do it for me, or I could have used FreshBooks. Now, FreshBooks is designed for the freelancer or the person who runs a small business. Because if you do, the chances are that your least favorite part of that business is rummaging through receipts, trying to keep track of your expenses, or creating, formatting, and sending invoices, or tracking down the customers who don't pay on time. FreshBooks is the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of businesses like yours the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Now, here's how it works. You create and send invoices in minutes. You organize your expenses easily. And it tracks automatically when your invoices are getting paid or not getting paid for. With their automated late payment reminders, you can avoid those awkward emails. Yeah, this is my favorite part, saying, hey, I noticed that you haven't paid me for half a year. Could you get on that? No. You get a nice professional letter automatically generated by FreshBooks that says, this is due. Please remit payment. I tell you, you're going to wonder why you didn't try it sooner. If you have questions, help is free forever, and you can always count on FreshBooks award-winning support rock stars to go above and beyond the duty whenever you need a hand. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to work smarter, not harder. Getting started is simple, and it's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/BYB. That's FreshBooks.com/BYB. And don't forget to enter Before You Buy in the How Did You Hear About Us section to throw some love to Before You Buy. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for their support of Before You Buy. Well, coming up next, we want to take a look at a review of, from Becky Worley. Specifically, we want to take a look at a Smart Lav microphone to find out if it's the thing that you need if you're a smart content producer.
Hey, Becky Worley here with a mini review of a mini product. This is the Smart Lav from Rode, and Lav being lavalier microphone. I bought this to do some production. I work for Good Morning America. That's my day job. And what this is it's a microphone that clips onto your lapel, your lavalier microphone. Right here you can see it. And then it goes into your phone. And what's neat about this is it doesn't have to be amplified in any way. It just goes straight in here and acts as a microphone. And then you can record audio into your voice memos. That's what I did when I used it the first time. And the quality is outstanding. It's broadcast quality. In fact, the first time I used this, what I was doing is I was guerrilla shooting something in a store where I didn't have permission to shoot with a big camera and an audio guy. So what I did was I used this. And someone shot me with their iPhone, and we were then able to marry the audio with the video. And if you've ever shot with an iPhone, you know that the limitation, or any phone really, if you shot video, the limitation is the audio. You can't get that far away. So having a professional-grade lavalier microphone that can record good audio is great. Now, you don't have to just use that in that weird situation where I had audio from one phone and video from another. That's a very specific instance. You might want to have a simultaneous recording of a presentation. Maybe you don't want to have a big microphone that someone's holding in their hand, or that big microphone's really expensive. And that brings me to the thing that's really interesting about this. It's only $99. It's from Rode. And when I showed this to Leo, he's like, oh, Rode, those guys are great. They know what they're doing. That's the manufacturer. $99, that's not bad. There are a couple of limitations. I was only able to get this working on an iPhone 6. I couldn't get it working on an iPhone 5 the first time I used it. I've only used it a couple times, so I have to say this is a fairly incomplete review. I'll stop recording myself now because I think we all see that we've got an audio form here, and I can play it back for you. You can hear it's pretty good.
What I was doing is I was guerrilla shooting something in a store where I didn't have permission to shoot with a big camera.
It's pretty good audio. I mean, it's really not bad. As I said, I did use it in a network news broadcast. The limitations of this are the cord is not very long, so you can't, you know, have this thing way far away and the phone far away and use the phone for video that easily. That's kind of a problem if you're going to try and record audio and video on the same phone. That's one of the problems. The iPhone 6 issue, I don't know for sure if that's ubiquitous, but I did have that trouble in the field. And as I said, this is just a little mini review, first-time use review. But I really like the idea, and I think it's a good indication of the direction that these types of products can go, because once you get a longer cord, once this is, you know, something you can use on multiple phones, if you can find one that works for Android, I just think this is sky's the limit, and it really changes production because audio is where it's at. I was once producing, I was hosting a show for the National Geographic Channel, and we had an audio blip in the middle of it, and the executive producer was furious, and he said, "Don't you understand? Viewers will always forgive you bad video, but they won't forgive you bad audio." So when you're making a production, put audio first. And this little gadget is not a bad step in that direction. So as always in this show, the question is buy, try, don't buy. I mean, I bought it. I paid money for this. So I bought it after, you know, hearing about it from one of my engineers at ABC. They love it and they use this in their digital journalism department. If you are in production and you want just a little tool for those situations where maybe you don't have a third lav and you're willing to, you know, marry all the audio in the edit, that's fine. I think it's definitely a buy in those situations. It's a very specific buy case, but audio is super, super important. So if you try it, if you buy it and try it, give me some feedback. I'm at B Worley on Twitter. I'd love to know what you think about it. And thanks for watching this review.
Becky Worley gives the Rode Smart Lav Plus microphone a buy. If you need a sub $100 lav microphone for whatever production you're doing, and if you actually understand that audio can be more important than video, maybe you need to check it out. Now, we want to switch gears a little bit. We've talked a little bit about phones. We've talked a little bit about earphones. We've even talked about microphones. Now we want to get onto the video side and talk about cameras, specifically about a beautiful camera that one of our very own had a chance to get his hands on. Russell, thank you very much for coming on to Before You Buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
This is the Sony A7 R2. Now, I know that Leo had the first version of this, and he really liked it.
Correct.
You got your hands on the updated version. Tell me what's different about this.
So I also had the A7, not the R, but just the regular A7 model. And so this is the second revision of the A7 R. This is a 42 megapixel full frame mirrorless camera. And Sony's really packed quite a bit of amazing things into this model and made it special. And it's got a lot of firsts that, you know, things that no other manufacturer's been able to do so far have been put into this camera.
Yeah. Now, let's keep that in mind because the sticker price is going to shock some people.
Yeah, so the old model, this one basically is about $1,000 more than the old model. So it's $3,199 for the body only.
Okay.
Which is, it's rather steep for a mirrorless camera. It's probably, I don't know if I can say it's the most expensive mirrorless camera out there, but it's definitely one of the most expensive mirrorless cameras out there.
And if you're spending three grand on the body, you're probably going to want to pair that with a decent lens. You don't buy a $3,000 camera and then a $60 lens.
Correct. And, yeah, there's not a kit that they sell with any sort of lens. So the lens I'm using on it today is the Zeiss Sony 16-35 f4 OSS lens. And so one of the things that I really enjoyed about this camera as an upgrade over my A7 and the A7R is that this has a new 5-axis stabilization system on the actual sensor. So I can't actually show it really well in operation here, but basically the sensor, this full-frame sensor that's inside the camera here.
Yeah, it actually moves. Yeah. Can you get in on that? Because people who don't understand how important full frame is, if you take a look at how big that sensor is versus what you'll see on a lot of cheaper, less expensive SLRs, there's so much more surface, which means I get so much more information, so much more light.
This is really massive in comparison. And so because this has the in-body stabilization, it actually works in tandem with the OSS lenses to give you a five-axis stabilization system. And so you can get about 4.5 to 5 stops of image stabilization, which is really huge because it means you can take shots at a lot lower shutter speed, and they'll still come out clear and sharp, and you'll be able to use lower ISO. One of the other amazing things is that this is the first full-frame sensor that is backside illuminated. And so the backside illuminated sensors are something that usually that's only been used in smaller sensors on smartphones or maybe point-and-shoot cameras. And what that means is that the wiring that they use to read the sensor is actually sitting at the very bottom of the photodiodes instead of in between the photodiodes and the micro lenses that are on top of the sensor. And what that means in effect is that you get a lot higher sensitivity. The light that comes in is not blocked by this wiring that's, normally in most sensors.
It doesn't help to have a really sensitive sensor if you're going to put things that block light from hitting it.
Right.
So, that's actually a big move. I understand that process, though, is expensive. It gets very expensive to do that, which probably accounts for some of the higher price.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing that they've been able to put that into a full-frame sensor. There's a couple other things that they've done on that sensor. That sensor has 399 phase detect autofocus points that are spread across about 60% of the sensor. So you've got a very wide and very large area for the autofocus system to use phase detect. And that's something that, traditionally older mirrorlesses would only use like a contrast detect AF. But some of the other Sony cameras and other manufacturers have started doing this lately. But the phase detect sensor makes it a lot more accurate, a lot faster, and it has a great tracking system. So this may be, I've used a lot of mirrorless cameras. This really may be one of the first ones that I would actually consider usable for sports and action.
Really?
And so that's something that's always been a very weak point before, but with 5 frames a second and that phase detect autofocus system, I'm really finding it to be quite accurate. And it doesn't make me miss my 1DX or a full-size DSLR.
I'm going to have to ask this. When people look at cameras like this and they see the price tag, it can be a little off-putting because they look at something like something from the Canon line and they say, I can get a complete system for $600. And then they look at this and they say, by the time I add a decent lens, I'm $4,000 into this camera. Where do you think that demarcation is? When does it become beneficial to take a camera like this? When do you think your skill level reaches that point where you actually are hindered by less advanced hardware?
Well, it's really something where if you're making money at photography and you have a reason to pay for something because it's going to get you the shot, it's going to, you're going to come back from an event and actually have shots that you wouldn't have had otherwise, or you'll have quality to make large prints, quality to sell to stock photo organizations, and it's really the average DSLR and the average kind of crop mirrorless camera that are maybe half the price or a third the price really are quite good today.
Right.
And so when you look at the difference in these images though, at 100%, you can zoom in and look at the images that this A7 R2 make, and all the way zoomed into Lightroom at 100%, it's still tack sharp. And that's something that is really valuable if you want to crop. It's valuable if you want to enlarge or blow up things.
But and technically, this is still a prosumer camera.
It really is a prosumer camera. I mean, I do have a Canon 1DX, which is the flagship kind of sports and photojournalist camera. And it's been hard for me to try to decide, going back and forth, is this something that, do I want to take my 1DX? Do I want to take the new A7 R2? And the A7 R2 takes way better photos. It takes higher resolution photos. The images just come out looking better. The low light is better. And, it's just overall a better camera. But if the 1DX lets you get the shots at MotoGP or, at a wedding, or that 10 frames, 12 frames a second that it can shoot will make the difference and sell a shot, then you still need to use that camera. But
well, here's the big question. If you were to carry this as your primary, because it is nice and small and compact. I do like that. I love the size factor.
And it's slightly larger, okay? So it's slightly larger than the old one, but they've made some important ergonomic changes to it. They've moved this shutter button into the more natural handheld position versus the kind of traditional top-style button that they had. And they've made a couple other tweaks, but it's still really pretty small.
Would you carry this as your primary? Would you be okay with having just this camera in your bag when you set out on a trip across Europe?
I think I can say yes.
Really?
And I've had it about 2.5 weeks, and I've basically got a little bit of a chance to run it through its paces, take a couple photos here and there, play with the video features. And the real key is that it works with the MetaBones adapters that allow you to use, like, my Canon EF lenses with autofocus. And it works amazingly well. It doesn't work perfectly with every Canon lens, so you'd want to make sure that your lens is supported. But if the MetaBones adapter will support your Canon lens, it'll basically autofocus just like a native camera or a native lens. So, the video is the key part. You know, like if this was just an amazing stills camera, which it is,
it still wouldn't be worth the price.
But it's also probably the best 4K DSLR style video. The video on this is just absolutely impressive. So it takes the entire full-frame sensor, and in real time, it downsamples it to the 4K video output. It doesn't do any pixel binning or line skipping. It takes that entire image and then down-reses it. So it looks a lot more like you've taken a bunch of photos in a kind of like a time-lapse and then stitched them together into a video.
I'm not seeing any frame-sharing whatsoever.
It doesn't have much rolling shutter. You can shoot in 100 megabit AVC. There's a new AVC. I can't remember the exact name for it. It's like XAVCS or something like that. And it's got 100 megabit of bandwidth for that encoding, so you don't really need to use an external recorder with it either. And then you can also attach accessories for XLR microphones, and you know, you can really rig it out to be a professional video camera. And you know, the one downside of that is that, and one of its only cons is really that it'll start to overheat after about 24, 25 minutes of recording at that maximum setting.
So this is really vignette shooting. This is not event shooting.
Yeah. So if you want to shoot, you know, a short, or if you want to shoot, you know, a couple things in travel and you're stitching them together later, it'll be great. But it doesn't really replace a 4K video camera or something like the Blackmagic, pocket cinema cameras and studio cameras.
All right, Russell, break this down for me. Give me the pros and the cons.
All right. So the pros are that the sensor resolution and autofocus speed for a mirrorless are just absolutely impressive. The low light performance is also incredible. It's almost as good as the A7S, only about a stop out of the A7S, but it has way more megapixels and way more detail. And then the video quality is just phenomenal. It's really impressive. It's got a bunch of different modes, color styles, all sorts of stuff that you can work with. Couple cons, though. The cons are going to be that the battery life really should be better. They say it's about 260 shots, but
You're not really going to get
260 shots unless you never chimp and look at the screen and never really use the video, and the viewfinder reduces the amount of shots that you'll get. And so they're nice enough to ship it with two batteries and an actual fast charger, which my previous A7 only came with one and no charger. But, you know, the battery life is really sort of a crutch of this camera. You're going to want to have a couple extra. And it doesn't have any integrated GPS
Can't geotag.
So you can't geotag or... You know, it's something that is a little bit of a minor issue, but it's something I would really like to have, especially for travel photography.
If you're investing this much in a camera, you're probably going to be taking interesting things with the camera, which means you travel, which means that would be a sort of a no-brainer feature.
Yeah, and you can use that. You can use the Wi-Fi and NFC features to just touch it to your smartphone, transfer images over. Maybe then you could write in where you were and put it on Facebook or something, but. I'd just like to see that, you know, at some point it would have it built in and it wouldn't be that one extra thing that might be in the A7 R III. So.
Right. And, of course, it's the price. It's a pricey camera.
And the price. It's a pricey camera, and, unless there's a real need for it, a need for the 4K video, really, I would have to say that the A7 II, which is about, I believe it's half the price, if not almost... somewhere right around there. It's right around half the price. That will give you almost everything this camera has, the in-body stabilization. It doesn't give you quite the megapixels or some of the other 4K video features, but overall, now you can buy some lenses.
All right, Russell, you got to give us your decision now. Is this a buy, try, or a don't buy?
Well, it's a buy. Okay. I bought it myself, and I am absolutely happy with it. I don't think I'm going to send it back. I think I'm going to be taking it on my next trips, and I'm considering selling all my Canon gear.
Wow. Okay.
So there's that.
That's a big buy, then.
Which is a big buy.
There you have it. It is a buy for the Sony A7 R2 from Russell Tammany. Of course, Russell is our IT guy. He's the one who keeps everything working here at the Twit Brick House. If you're looking for a full-frame camera that takes beautiful stills and absolutely gorgeous 4K video, maybe this is for you. Now, Russell, where can people find you if they want to find your work and, of course, the work you do here at Twit?
Well, I'm on Twitter at Exposé, which is E-X-P-H-O-S-E. And also my photography is on russell.exposé.com.
We'll look for that. And we'll look for you on another episode of Before You Buy. You do get some very interesting gear every once in a while.
I do. And yeah, and Leo asked me to, review it. And his came in late. And I got it first. So.
There you go.
There you go.
This could be your next camera. Just find yourself $4,000. Because people are commenting, a Zeiss lens? Oh, by the way, how much is this lens?
I believe that lens is $1,300, $1,200 or $1,300.
Okay. Almost as much as my computer. All right.
You're going to want to have a couple of them. So,
of course, naturally.
You'll want to collect all four or five of them. So.
Speaking of collecting four or five of them, this next sponsor of this episode of Before You Buy is all about collecting the interesting gear that you have in your life as a maker. Now, Brian Burnett and I have long used this sponsor for everything we do on our show, Know How, because they understand that what you need are comprehensive kits, kits that will help you with every aspect of doing what you have to do. Now, iFixit is naturally going to be the sponsor, and naturally, we love their ProTech Toolkit, but they've got something else. This is the Repair Business Toolkit. Oh, this is serious business. It comes in this wonderful little bag. It's got this fold-down area that has all the drivers that you're ever going to need. I also love this. It's got a multimeter. It's got an anti-static mat. It's really designed not for just the people who need a toolkit every once in a while. It's for the people who do nothing but repair, who do nothing but fix, who do nothing but creatively think of ways to hack each and every single device. It's got all the things you love. It's got the ProTech toolkit. It's got the multimeter. It's got the drivers. It's got the anti-stack kit. It's got the magnetic mat so your pieces and parts never go away. It's even got things like suction cups and this wonderful little eye screen remover that allows you to get into iPhones and iPads and pretty much every device that you may ever need to tinker with. Now, if you like this kit, you're really going to like what it does for you, because it doesn't just have that ProTech screwdriver kit. It doesn't just have the eye opener. It doesn't just have the heavy-duty suction cups or the digital multimeter or the cleaning tools or the dust blower. And it's not just neatly organized in a custom iFixit messenger bag, but when you get this kit, you also get everything that iFixit gives you with it. Hundreds and thousands of repair guides, the ability and the information to fix pretty much everything. It's just $249.95, and I'm telling you, if it's not for the geek on your list, it should be for you. This is the way to kickstart your repair business or to complete your arsenal of tools. This giant bundle is available right now for you for just $249.95. That's $100 less than buying all these parts individually. And again, best of all, when you buy this, you get the assurance that you're going to be able to use iFixit's repair guides to get into and fix every gadget and gizmo that you have. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to try iFixit. We want you to save $10 off of any purchase of $50 or more by entering the code Before You Buy at checkout. That's iFixit.com, and use the code Before You Buy to save $10 off. And we thank iFixit for their support of Before You Buy. Now, folks, it's a sad day here at Before You Buy. You see, 6 months ago, we got this this wonderful beast, this main gear PC. They wanted me to see if maybe this might be the gaming desktop for me, and I decided that we were going to do a long-term review. We didn't want to just tell you, oh, it's fast, or it's blinky, it's shiny, it has a lot of really good parts. If we were going to pay this much for a PC, we wanted to actually take it home and use it on a daily basis, to use it as my video editing machine, as my gaming machine, to see how it held up to months of being on 24/7. We don't want a fan to break. We don't want parts to fall off. We wanted to see if this was really as good as Main Gear set it up to be. Now, if you are a system builder, if you're one of these people who only builds your own high-end systems, then you're probably going to want to turn off the podcast right now. But if not, you need to check out the Main Gear Shift Superstock X99.
We asked for something crazy, so Main Gear sent us their Shift Superstock X99 gaming PC. This box is a customized collection of hyper-horsepower hardware that typifies Main Gear's as-fast-as-you-need, as-expensive-as-you-want madness. How mad? Well, try this. An Intel i7-5960X 8-core CPU with 20 megabytes of L3 cache, overclocked by Main Gear's Redline overclocking service to 4.5 gigahertz on top of an Asus X99 Deluxe motherboard. 16 gigabytes of Corsair Dominator DDR3000 memory next to two NVIDIA GeForce 980 video cards in SLI with a total of 8 gigabytes of DDR5 memory. Two Samsung 850 EVO SSDs in RAID 0, ideal for the OS and programs, a 3 terabyte Seagate 7200 RPM Barracuda hard drive for storage, and a 12X Blu-ray burner for optical. A custom water cooler for the CPU and a Corsair AX860 professional modular power supply, complete with black-sleeved cables to tidy the case and improve airflow. And Main Gear's angelic lifetime labor and phone support service with 2 years of comprehensive warranty. What does that get you? Well, in 3DMark Fire Strike Extreme, a benchmark that is notorious for bringing even high-end PCs to their knees, the X99 scored 12,105. In Geekbench R15, it notched 4145 in single and 31212 in multi. It maintained 112 frames per second in the Valley Ultra 3D benchmark and clocked 4813 in PC Mark. Beyond benchmarks, the last 6 months of using the X99 for video editing and effects work has been unreal. Renders are fast, really fast. The system is always responsive, and I feel like I've been coming up with ways to tax the CPU and video cards just so I can justify having so much unbridled power in my desktop. I have to say, I've never experienced a complete power package like the Main Gear Shift Superstock X99. That's just the headliners in this beautiful box. There's plenty more that we'll get to later, but it's pretty clear that this is going to perform far better than any off-the-shelf beige box, and even better than most custom builds. Along with the lifetime support, the Main Gear Shift Superstock would be a no-brainer, but then there's the price. As configured, $5,926. Yeah, I get it. That's a lot. For many of us, that's a crazy lot, an insurmountable lot, a are-you-out-of-your-mind lot. But take a deep breath, blow into this bag, and let me show you what else comes out of the box. We should probably start with the over-the-top case. Main Gear customized the X99 in Twit Blue, complete with our logo in automotive powder coat to give it a high-gloss, high-durable finish. A window cut into the side panel lets us see all the goodies, especially when paired with the in-case LED lighting system. But it's not all bling. The X99 case rotates the motherboard 90 degrees so that the ports are at the top of the case, accessible under a slide-out panel. This orientation, called advanced vertical heat dissipation, allows the hot components to be at the top, with cooler air circulating from the bottom via two 120mm fans. This lets you run really hot components without a really loud PC. The case also has 5 full-size drive bays and 6 3.5-inch drive trays with an optional SATA backplane. I can't stress enough how clean the inside of this case is and how expandable. Port-wise, well, it has all the ports. Underneath the slide-out panel, you'll find 2 gigabit Ethernet ports, 10 USB 3.0 ports that also support USB-attached SCSI protocol, 2 USB 2.0 ports, one of which includes USB BIOS flashback functionality that allows you to restore to a clean BIOS should yours be corrupted, 3 ports for an external 8-11 AC wireless antenna, and SPDIF plus 2, 4, 6, and 8-channel audio. But wait, there's more! A pop-up port box towards the front of the case houses 2 additional USB 3.0 ports, microphone and headphone jacks, and media card readers. When it comes time to connect your X99 to a monitor, or 8, well, you've got options.
Each of the PNY NVIDIA GTX 980 video cards has three display ports, one HDMI, one DVI port, and can run four screens. I didn't run eight screens because I don't have eight screens, but it's nice to know that I've got options. Over the course of our extended review, I put the X99 through everything from the daily grind of a content producer to the late nights of a gamer running 4K real-time strategy simulations. In that time, the main gear shift Superstock X99 turned me from a skeptical chiphead who couldn't fathom why he would spend so much money for a custom box to an admirer who wished he had the cash to buy one.
Of course, I get it. That is a lot of money. In fact, you could get this thing configured all the way up to, I think, $7,000 if you were to throw a bunch of extra drives in. And remember, we got this thing 6 months ago, and it has been on. It has been completely on and running 24/7. It has never shut down once, and everything works just fine. And I think that's a testament to what Main Gear has done with the case. Yes, it's heavy. Yes, it's big. But that whole idea of pulling in cool air through the bottom, putting the hot components at the top, means that hard drives like the Seagate Barracuda 3TB last longer. It means your components are going to end up running cooler and therefore lasting longer. And it also means that they can overclock this thing like no one else's business. This is definitely not a computer that you're going to get on a budget, but then again, that's not who it was designed for. I know there's going to be people out there who are going to say, well, still, $6,000, that's a lot of money. But if you were to just buy the components, I actually broke it down, just buy the components, the cheapest places you can find, Newegg and Amazon, just the raw materials of this computer are close to $5,000. That means you're paying about $1,000 for lifetime support, and for a really cool case, and for a lot of enhancements, like the Redline overclocking service. Oh, think about it this way. If you build yourself a $5,000 computer and something breaks, it's your responsibility. If they build you a $6,000 computer and something breaks, and remember, some of the components in here are $1,000 or more, it's their responsibility. All right, now let's break it down to the pros and the cons. On the pro side, it's fast, crazy fast. This is beyond doubt the fastest PC I have ever had in my lab. It goes beyond the Predator, which I love. And actually, listen, it's on right now. So this ridiculously fast computer with two video cards, with an 8-core CPU, with all that stuff running in there right now, including a refrigeration system for the CPU, is almost dead quiet. I could not hear it on my desk. It was in my active studio, which means it had to be quiet. It's also very well designed in that it's beautiful. It's just attractive. I love the fact that they gave us the Twit logo on the back. You could get this powder coat. This is not paint. This is not spray paint. This is powder coat, the same stuff they use on automotive jobs, which means it's going to be nice and durable. It's going to stay glossy. This thing still feels as good as it did the day that I took it home for reviewing it. Also, the expandability. That Asus X99 motherboard is fantastic. You're going to be able to drop in another video card if you want. It will support NVMe, so if you want to run a PCIe SSD and get ridiculous transfer speeds for your games and your OS, you've got that. And with all those drive bays, you don't really need to ever store anything external. Now, let's talk a bit about the cons. And I really can only think of one thing. It's going to be price. I understand this is an expensive machine, but what it comes down to is, if you can't afford this, you're not going to buy it. But if you can afford it, and you are looking for a lot of power, and you don't want to have to assemble it yourself and support it yourself, then this ends up being a really good deal. Try, buy, or don't buy? Well, personally, even though I will never be able to afford one, I've got to give the Main Gear Shift Superstock X99 a 100% absolute extreme buy. Now, that's it. That's all we've got time for on this episode of Before You Buy. I want to thank all of our reviewers for giving us their time and their insight, to Jason Howell, to Megan Maroney, to Becky Worley, and, of course, to Russell Tammany for showing us what the best of the gadgets look like. And, of course, to Main Gear for letting us borrow this PC. We'll be getting it back to you probably in, Brian, what would you say, 6 months?
Maybe like a year.
Yeah, it's got to go downstairs so we can repackage it.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be right back up. Remember, we do the show every Friday at 1:30 p.m. No, I'm sorry, what time is it? At 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
3 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. We're always moving around. Just go to live.twit.tv and you can watch the pre-show, the post-show, and everything in between. I also do want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, of course, to Lisa and to Leo Laporte, and my super producer, Karsten Bondi, and my TD, Cranky Hippo Brian Burnett. Brian, could you tell the folks where they can find you on the Twit TV network?
Yeah, right after I wipe the drool off of my face, that PC, Padre, can we please have it for a little bit longer? I didn't get to use it at all.
Carson, we haven't told them that we're done with the review, have we?
Nope.
Okay, so yeah, I guess it stays here for a while.
You can find me at @cranky_hippo on Twitter, and I do Know How with you on Thursdays.
Fantastic. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballas here, and remember, you gotta watch before you buy.